you and Ian have discussed Herod. I'm sure you've discussed Herod with a lot of people. Herod is ubiquitous. He's everywhere here. He is probably the most creative, the most charismatic, and the most crazy person who has ever graced the pages of Jewish history. He is a question mark at all times. Is he a Jew? Isn't he a Jew? What was his motive? Who was his... He is always a puzzle. I can only relate to you what we know. Herod's family was a family of converts at a time when conversion was not uncommon. In the area of Marishah, which is actually near the present-day Kiryat Gat, we have archaeological evidence of a group of people who immigrated from Edom. All right, Edom is where the Nabataeans are, Petra. They were pushed out by the Nabataeans sometime in the 4th century before the Common Era. They came across, they settled in the northern Negev, and it was there that they built themselves a city-state. The head of that group, the royal family, was Herod's family. Along came a Hasmonean king by the name of Yochanan Hyrcanus. He said to them, convert or die, right? You either convert or I'm going to destroy your little city state. You're all going to have to leave. And so Herod's father, possibly his grandfather, was a smart guy, said, sure. What difference did it make if he worshipped the god of the Judeans that no one could see? Or he worshipped all the other idols. If you've been to Petra, you know that there are plenty of idol figures there. So they converted. Therefore, Herod is from a family of converts. However, then through a series of circumstances, Hyrcanus disappears. Herod's father is brought to the court in Jerusalem. He becomes the regent, and when he dies, guess who walks in to his role? Herod the Great. So Herod, schooled in Rome, appropriately by his father, is now the ruler of Judea. What does he do? He does what's most logical. He gets on a fast ship, he takes himself to Rome, he presents himself to the emperor, he said, I want to be crowned the king of the Judeans. And in an unheard of short period of time, he was back on the boat with a mandate from the Roman emperor to be the king of Judea, right? So, while he called himself the king of the Jews weren't so sure about him. He neither walked, talked, or acted like a Jew. He walked like a Roman, he talked like a Roman, he thought like a Roman, he ate like a Roman, and he certainly was not kosher enough ever to pray in the temple. And that's probably how this huge public building came to be on the south, because there he could hang out and meet the greats and not so greats who would come trotting up the stairs of Robinson's entryway. Right? So, what does he do? Comes back to Jerusalem, takes a look at the temple after seeing the grandeurs of Rome and says, this is not a city for a king in the Roman Empire. I'm going to build. Now, if you're Herod, you have two masters. One is called the emperor, Sichadin. Emperor, who you have to keep happy, right? You send him your taxes, send him soldiers for his legions, send him your best olive oil, whatever it is. And the other is your people. Look at what's happening in places like Thailand, where the king is insensitive to what's being said, right? We have it in so many places. So what happens? He has to go to the Jews. So he goes to the priests and the Levites. Not too many rabbis that time in our history, because the word rabbi is just a teacher. I shouldn't say just. Teachers are very important. Goes to the priests and the Levites, and he says, I'm going to build the temple. And they say, no. And he says, yes, I am. And he says, no. And that's why it took 18 years to get them to agree. And when they finally agree, they get two promises. One is that not one slave will work on the building. Not one. It will all be paid labor. It's enormous when you think about what Herod had to put out. But then again, he had the keys to the temple treasury, and he himself was very wealthy. And the second caveat was that when it came to building the Holy of Holies, only the priests and the Levites themselves would do the job. Right? So we were talking about a WPA project. Oh, I don't think some of you are old enough to remember the WPA.
No, yeah.
But if you studied American history in the last century, you know that there was huge public works. So they all learned. They became engineers, bricklayers, plumbers, whatever. Not electricians, but the equivalent. The work took 10 years. It took 10,000 men. We have no idea how much it cost. But if you figure the cost of modern building today and you look at the expanse, 6 acres of land, right? 1/6 today of the old city is devoted to the temple. And this is the way his engineers, all Roman trained, coming from there, this is what they did. If we say that this hat, is the temple, let's take this in. And the button on top is the top of Moriah, where the temple is standing already. Remember, the Maccabees rebuilt the temple of Nehemiah and Ezra. They rebuilt it, they enlarged it, they aggrandized it. So there's a pretty substantial core right there. So this is the temple, this is the slope going down, and there probably is a platform already, a small one. Not the area at the north that I took away, but here on that flat area that I said perhaps was the logical spot. Fine. Herod's engineers carve a deep trench along the crest of the Valley of Haggai. And that becomes the western wall. All the way out here where my fingertips are, they dig a trench on the slope going down for the southern wall, which is 280 meters long. The western wall is nearly 500 meters. On the west, they go along the valley of the Kidron and they dig another trench. And on the north, they cut away the high point, like I showed you, and put in the line of what will be the northern wall, which is, ironically, the longest wall of all, because this is not a perfect rectangle. It is absolutely the opposite. So that you have a small, narrow wall here, you have the longest wall here, this wall goes on an angle, and this wall, all following the topography. Good. They quarry the stones to the north. They drag the stones down paved streets. So much easier than dragging them down the valley and then having to lift them. Very smart. What do? You fill in the valley so that we have maybe 10, 15 meters of fill. Then you lay the streets, you bring them along, you slide them in. You raise these walkways or causeways, you pave the ground, you build it up. So eventually what happens is the walls rise, and they rise and they rise. So from my elbow all the way out to here, you have the western wall, then you have the southern, the northern, okay, and the eastern. Fine. What do you do when you get to the top? You've got a box around the baseball hat. And there are spaces. Spaces that lead to the valley, spaces here. You can't leave a vacuum. And so they put in cantilevered arches. Why not dirt? Why didn't they just take the dirt that they had dragged in this long distance to make these streets and put them in there? Because Herod didn't use any cement. And if you have no cement, eventually the rain and the climatic conditions will cause the dirt inside to harden. And it will push against the stones, even if it's minimal. But over time, Herod wanted it to last forever. And the stone walls would become distorted. And so rather than do that, he took out all the dirt. He put in these arches. And then on top of the arches, he paved the platform. Then his engineers built the royal basilica, the Stoa. And they rebuilt the temple. Josephus says the service never stopped and the holy fire never went out. There was no interruption in public worship. I'd say that's quite a feat. All right? In between the cantilevered arches, he made the gates. two sets of gates on the south, the four major gates on the western side. On the east, one gate, the golden gate, which through which the Messiah will come, according to tradition. I just saw Fiddler for about the 50th time, and when he sang that song, I thought, tradition is so much a part of what we talk about here, the coming of the Messiah. And on the north, he took this barris that was standing pretty much neglected, unconnected to the temple complex, and he made it an integral part. And then he opened up the gates, and you came. You came on Shavuot, which was last week. You brought your sacrifice here if you were from out of town. If you were local, you came in here. And all of that continued. Herod remained the king when this finished until the year 6 before the Common Era, when he died of an unknown cause. Up until a few years ago, we said he died of syphilis or some venereal disease. It's very interesting. Modern archaeology has shown us, along with modern science, with DNA and other testing, that the syphilis did not exist until much, much later. So he died of something, not natural causes. I mean, he didn't have a heart attack. In any case, his temple stood until the year 70, right? And then it was leveled, not destroyed, leveled. The Romans came on the summer morning, the 9th of Av, which is coming up. In the third attempt, they came through, they destroyed the basilica, they came through the Antonia fortress, and on the August morning of the 9th of Av, they destroyed the temple. And that became the seminal date in Jewish history to mark the destruction, and it has followed us, unfortunately, through the last 2,000 plus years. But what happened to those walls that we built around the baseball hat? Tough, aren't they? Mm-hmm. The Romans knocked them down to a certain point. I want you to understand the Roman, the ancient mind. When they say they destroyed something, it does not mean that they leveled it. Only in Dio Cassis, 100 years later, 65 years later, do you have a line that says, I razed the city to the ground. Otherwise, their idea of destruction was to knock down a couple of rows to show the strength of the Roman war machine, and that was enough. But they hated the Jews as a result of what had taken place in this war of 4 years. They realized that the Jews were stiff-necked and that they would try and come back. And so to make an ultimate ruin of this area, what they did was to take the walls down, see this area of the pilasters, that all came down. And they left, we're told in a legend, just this section standing. Why? For a very interesting reason. We say it's because now we can pray there. They said they left it to show the might of Rome, that this small fragment remained, and they destroyed everything. It was like they were thumbing their nose at us. And of course, 1,300 years later, Jews began to come back here and to pray. We are at the spot of the longest stone. It's called the Master Court. Look how tall it is. Most of the stones are 3 meters high. All of the stones have these frames. Can you see the frame?
Yes.
Arnold, thank you. Arnold is standing at the end of the stone, right there. Sir? Could you turn around and walk to the end of the stone? Keep going. No, we're talking about this row. Very good. Any guesses? Length.
30 feet.
Pardon?
30, 40 feet.
It's 15 and a half meters long, and it weighs?
560 tons.
Oh, you did your homework. Okay, now, the obvious answer to my question, I'm sure one of you will give me. How did they move this stone?
Nobody knows.
Well, I would say carefully is a better answer. If it fell on you, you are dead. The fact is that they probably used this idea that I told you about of bringing it on rollers. They didn't have to lift it, although they knew about winches and pulleys. Don't think for a minute these people were unsophisticated. Okay, they were pretty smart. So let's leave the master course and go towards the Manishma.